Are you sick of hearing you don't have enough experience to get work? Visit iPath.com to get the first part of our auto damage certification for free. Hello and welcome to the Independent Adjuster Podcast by iPath. My name is Chris Stanley, and we're here to help you figure out how to get work in this industry and ultimately how to claim your life.
Welcome to the Independent Adjuster Podcast. My name is Kobe Hearn. This is my better half, Ashley Kitterman. And today we are bringing you a brand spanking new episode with a new format. Ashley, tell the viewers hi.
Welcome. Hello.
She's going to be joining me as we continue and push through on the podcast episodes. Bringing a female perspective, also someone that's had just as about as much experience in the industry as I have. And then we're going to also be doing some interviews with guests and future episodes. But on this episode in particular, we're going to just start out kind of talking about how we got into the industry, what, you know, try to get her thoughts, because we've actually never sat down and really reflected on our journey thus far. So we want to take you through that for you guys that are thinking about getting into the industry, people that may have just gotten into the industry, for people that are working potentially together, or at least have a spouse, a wife, a husband that is not in the industry initially, and kind of get that perspective of how this all kind of comes together, how it feels through the different years. So first and foremost, we're going to get into it here with the ability to talk about our initial thoughts. And when I say that, it's really a two-part thing, Ashley. So I'll start, you know, asking obviously her, because what were your, you know, kind of initial thoughts when we, you know, started thinking about this industry?
Well, I was very, very comfortable in the industry I was in. So obviously making a big change was a huge concern for me. My initial thoughts, though, were really more kind of geared toward, this sounds fun. This seems like there could probably be some travel in this. It was very unknown for me. I hadn't done a lot of research on the auto side of it. I was actually really more looking into like thinking the property side, because I have a good girlfriend that's into that. And I had seen her live her life the way she's lived it the last, I don't know, 10 years I've known her. And I thought, oh, that'd be really fun. That's really interesting. And then when Kobe really started looking into it and looking more into the auto side of things, it kind of threw me for a curveball. I was like, what is this we're talking about? And after listening to him talk about it and reading up on it a lot more, I was like, okay, this actually sounds more, I guess, stable to me, and seemed a little bit more appealing.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I remember that. I remember, you know, when we first started, we talked to your really good friend that had been doing property forever. And I think that I don't really know many people that get into the auto side of the industry without thinking, you know, property first. It's the most attractive. I think a lot of, you know, podcasters, influencers, people trying to sell you things are always talking about how much money they make and throw that out there as kind of like a clickbait. To get you guys and gals to you know, chase the money. And I think that's what a lot of people run to this industry. And we did think that was appealing, but I think the bigger thing that struck us was the fact that her friend had been doing this forever was that she, you know, she was talking, you know, she'd work 4 or 6 months a year and take the rest of the year off traveling and doing all kinds of awesome things. And so that sounded really appealing to us initially. And I'll be honest, I know, you know, I think I speak for both of us here that we are very conservative when it comes to making decisions. This is not something, this career especially was something very scary, I think, to us. I mean, I did a lot of research. We found Matt Allen at Adjuster TV and listened to a lot of his podcasts, a lot of his information, which was great. But then we found Chris Stanley at IPath. We found Mile High Adjusting. We found, you know, Veteran Adjusting School. So we found a lot of different things and resources. But when we found Chris Stanley and got to talk to him on the phone at IPath, the plan was still property. I mean, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We were still thinking property, thinking, you know, oh, we were going to jump into this. But at the time, you know, the property class that was being offered by Matt Allen or his, like, you know, kind of master class on property was not till the fall. So we ended up doing auto by default. Like, it was like, okay, maybe we'll do this and then we'll work our way into property, and auto will just be kind of a get between. And I think some people start that way. But once we got going and took it, you know, took the course at the time that was being offered, the moment I got out, before I even got out, we already had firms that onboarded us, onboarded me. And it was kind of crazy. You know, it was like being shot out of a cannon. So that was the interesting thing. It was very, it was a really interesting time, because at the time you were still working your full-time job. And I remember us having that conversation. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. You spent a lot of time researching, reading, and I would come home from working and you'd have all kinds of new information to give to me. And then I'd go back to work and I'd be thinking about it while I'm at work, and I'd come home and Kobe'd have a whole bunch more information about stuff. And I know you guys,
at the time we were it was like right at the start of COVID. So I was actually at home. Like, I was basically, you know, we were shut down. You were deemed essential. So therefore, she was a retail manager, for anybody wondering. And I was in the sports and entertainment industry. So you can imagine who was more essential out of the two of us. So I was ended up sitting home. But continue with what you were saying.
I was just going to say, for any of you that know Kobe, you know that when he does something, he goes and he does it and he doesn't stop. And so the research that I would come home to every night, it was like coming home. It was the start of COVID. It was really crazy. I was exhausted. I didn't have my full team at work. And then I would come home and Kobe would just vomit all this information on me, and my mind was just going in so many different directions, like, oh, this isn't what we talked about earlier, this is completely different. Okay. But he had a lot of time to kind of really dive in and figure out, you know, what might be the best route for us, or let's try this. We don't like to have all our eggs in one bucket per se. So he had lots of different ideas out there. He did a ton of research, and it was ever evolving.
Yeah, that's eggs in a basket, by the way.
Well, bucket, whatever. Thank God.
So, because we've never talked about it, what were your biggest concerns going into it?
So I like stability. My job, I wouldn't say was routine, but I was in a salaried position. I knew what my expectations were. I, for the most part, knew what was coming in a day. I knew what had to be done. And so I guess my real true fear was the uncertainty. We didn't really personally know anyone that had been doing this. So the only people we really spoke to were my good friend in property, and what her life is like, and the help that she could give us. But we didn't know anyone in this field. We didn't have anyone personally that we could, like, ask these questions to.
And she was even one to discourage us from auto. Oh, you can't make money. I've heard you can't make any money in auto. So, I mean, yeah, that was a big concern with stability. The other concern I really had was, you know, what our life was going to look like trying to, you know, juggle doing this. And I remember, you know, what was so nice about IAPath, and, you know, shameless plug, but is that it laid out every step of, you know, when to get your business license, when to get your adjuster license, you know, X, Y, Z, all the way to the finish line of getting claims. And then once I started getting claims, they had the community for support. But excuse me, honestly, you know, community was great. But I remember, you know, when we first started, it was just me. She stayed in a solid retail job, retail manager job, to make sure that, you know, we kind of hedged our bets. Like, hey, if somebody's going to fail at this, it's probably better that I did, because we were in an industry that was so shut down and so devastated that, you know, getting out and doing it on my own was a good risk, because it was a long road to recovery, where her job, she was very secure. They weren't shutting down. So we, you know, I think that we hedged our bets there, but once we got going, it was just me. And I remember feeling so insecure. And I am not, if anybody's spoken to me, I am not an insecure person. You can ask, you know, the lovely person to my left here. I'm just not. I've never have been. I've never, you know, anything I've went to do, I have either prepared myself correctly or, you know, been just naturally gifted, thankfully, to be good at it for whatever I did decide to do. Not everything out there I'm good at, but the things I've chosen to do. And I went to do this, and I was scared. I was afraid. I was insecure about the fact that, oh, I'm a fraud. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I was really touchy, and I'll just go ahead and publicly apologize to my better half now. I was working 12, 14, 16 hours a day starting out, trying to keep up with the volume because I was so slow, and it was really hard. And I remember, you know, Ashley was always asking, even after she worked, you know, long days. And if you've ever been in retail, you know what that's like, especially at a managerial level. But she'd always ask how she could help. What was that like when I was working on my own for you?
It was hard. It was really hard. Kobe and I, we work very well together. And so when you can't help your partner do something, or can't help them achieve something, or you don't have any input, or you can't take anything off of them, it is just so hard to sit and watch them. Kobe would work really late nights. And I would try, and I would sit there, and I had no idea what he was doing. I watched some of the courses from IAPath, but at the end of the day, I didn't know what he was doing. He taught me everything. So I would sit and I would watch him, and I'm like, how can I help you? What can I do? So finally I would find little things to like help him. I'm like, let me fill out your scope sheets for you. Let me put these in order for you. Let me put these in your binder. Just any little thing I could do.
Let me make calls.
Can I call people for you? I'll take my lunch break and I'll make these phone calls on my lunch break. And then, you know, I'll update you. I was just itching to take something off of his plate. It was so hard to watch him, you know,
if you're
struggle.
Thinking she's too good for me, you're right. I 100% know that. Brad Fancher and plenty of other people have reminded me of this often. But yeah, she just was great. You know, having that support system, you know, whether it's your wife, your kids, everybody on board with what you're doing. Because again, there was nights I was up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and you were right there with me or supporting me, or, you know, making sure I woke up on time for the next day or whatever it was. Like, you didn't, you know, get upset with me that I was staying up, or that I was, you know, we were squandering a weekend that we could be going somewhere, which was really helpful. Because I was so insecure at the time, any kind of negativity in my life, I think at that point, and I guess that's the point I want to, you know, I should emphasize, is that when you start out, whether it's in property or auto, but especially in auto, if you have tons of years in body shop or whatever, and you know cars, you really got to have a really good support system. It's really, really crucial, I think, to your success. And above all else, avoid the negativity, because there's so many people who say, oh, you can't make money in auto, or people want to, you know, sometimes people just want to see you fail, or they just want to they don't believe that you can do it. So it was very good for me to have such a great support system, stay away from negativity. I didn't have any negative thoughts coming into my mind. I had some negative thoughts coming into my mind, but I didn't have anything reinforcing those thoughts. I stayed out of Facebook groups and stuff like that. And with the community at IAPath, with all these veteran appraisers that came long before I did, it was nothing but a positive community. It was a positive experience. It was positive support. You know, I can't thank all of those guys so much for being there for a phone call and just making me, you know, reassuring me that, hey, everybody has to start somewhere, right? So I thought that was always really, important, and I wanted to highlight that. And obviously, Ashley was fantastic with that. With that being said, what did you think that were kind of the, how do I want to frame this? What were the negatives of when, you know, I started? Like, once I got going, was there things that you saw besides the late nights or things that bothered you about the industry?
There's really nowhere to get answers. You know, I'm like, I get when you work on your own, you are your own boss, but I was so confused when there was nowhere to get answers. Like, what is there no like master place you can go and like find this answer or this like, I don't understand. And so obviously the community provided a lot of assistance. And I remember so many times us just being like, what are we doing? What is going on here? We're so confused. Like, we don't even know if what we're doing is right. Kobe mentioned earlier, he thought he was committing fraud. And then I started to believe that. I was like, I don't understand. But other than that, I think that's really the big thing is I found it weird that there was no like master answer book for like what he had at hand. I'd say.
Yeah. I remember getting into it, and I think a lot of people, if you think about it, nobody grows up wanting to be an insurance insurance industry, right? Like, I don't, there's not a single kid I think grows up and says, you know, they want to be a fireman, a policeman. Nobody says they want to be an insurance, right? And really, if you think about it, to the public, the only job in insurance that people really know as far as the general public forward facing is an insurance agent. They don't know about adjusters and you know, much less independent adjusters. They may know something about staff as you get older. But I think when I was, you know, a kid growing, I never knew anything about insurance. I knew you had to have it. I think it's funny because I found out that I am sure now that an insurance contract, as far as, you know, your auto or your home or whatever, I think that is the least read contract that is signed by almost all people all over the United States. I think it's the least read contract. I mean, if I think back to it, I think that was a huge shock to me that, you know, most people have no idea what's even in their policy unless they've got a really good agent to explain it. So the, you know, it's crazy what you think is the insurance industry, especially when you think about auto. I think, oh yeah, well, you've just got coverage, but how it's applied, about all the different parts and the guidelines, and there's just it's like an insurance underworld of how things work, really. And you know, the misconceptions and what you think would be straightforward is not as straightforward. Switching gears, how did you feel? Because obviously, you know, you supported me for a really long time. I mean, I think I did this almost a year on my own. You started gradually getting more and more involved, but then you came in. So tell me what that was like for you when that went on.
Okay. So obviously I had just seen a lot of the making phone calls, you know, which I look back on that now, and I'm grateful that I didn't get some of the questions that I've gotten in this last year when I was making those phone calls at first, because I probably would have been a little like stumped. But I was so honored that Kobe had given me that responsibility or allowed me to like do that for him. So if anything came about, I was always like, oh my gosh, Kobe, what do I do? What do I do? But, you know, it went from making phone calls, writing scope sheets, organizing his binder, anything I could possibly do to, I'll never forget. The first time I really, really got my feet wet was when we had an opportunity to go to Gillette, Wyoming.
Yeah, I remember that trip.
If anybody's been to Wyoming, you have no cell service. You're driving in the backwoods of anywhere. Don't show up uninvited. I mean, there's lots of things about Wyoming, but I remember going and I was so excited because I was going to get to see everything hands on. Little did I know how much pressure and how busy and fast paced things were going to be. So that's when I really got to see things. I remember Kobe handed me a scoper and said, go, I got to take care of this RV. Go, you know, scope that truck over there.
Why don't you tell the actual story of what happened?
I was not maybe prepared for what I was getting into.
Hold on, let me give a little backstory, okay? We went up to Gillette, Wyoming. It was like a mini deployment for hail claims. One of the firms needed some help up there. So I just said, dump them in my lap. I think we had like, 30 or 40? And at that time...
That was a lot to us.
At that time, that was a lot. Like, you know, when I did 8 or 10 a day, even in hail, just hail claims, I mean, it took me 16 hours at that time. I just was not quick with writing. I was not efficient. So we went up there and we were all excited. Like we're going to go check out Northern Wyoming up here, you know, and have some fun, try to have some fun with it. But it was business. And, you know, we hit some claims along the way and got up there. But, you know, between the fact that we were so pressed for time, we tried to fit too much in too soon, but we had to get back because she had to get back to work. So we tried to do all of this above our heads, really. And she would help drive, or she would help, you know, write out, or she was kind of learning how to do estimates at the time, weren't you?
Yeah, and I was following you around with the scope sheet, writing it, so you didn't have to take the time to write the scope sheets out.
That's right. You weren't really writing. She was writing the scope sheet, and then I would sit in the car and write it while she was driving to the next one. Well, we get to this plane, and setting the stage for you. So the hail had pelted these houses. It looked like AK-47s had just shot these houses, windows blown out. I mean, the barn that we have two claims, a truck, an old truck, and an RV, like class A motorhome in a barn that's roof blew off 2 miles away and hit someone else's house is what they told us, right? So I'm supposed to inspect this class A RV, which it's huge. It's massive. And the roof blew off, but it also kind of caved in, like the structural supports, the beams. So I have to get up here. It's not safe. And honestly, looking back, it was stupid of me to get up there and check because I got to check the roof. That's the big thing, right? For damages. So while I go to do that, by myself with nobody, and I leave my wonderful wife here. I said, here's a scoper, inspect this car. I get up on this RV. I'm scared to death. I'm not big on heights. That's why we stuck with Otto. One of the main reasons we stuck with Otto. And here she is with this. I'm country, so I call it like I see it, but I would call it a Wyoming redneck for sure. Talking her ear off, and she's just freaking out. Go ahead and finish the story.
Anyway, it was a white truck in my defense, so it was hard to see. I couldn't find anything. I was like, I have no idea what I'm looking at. I had sunglasses on because it was really bright out. I think I may have even had some sandals on that were not really equipped to be walking around. I didn't think I was going to be out walking around. I thought I was going to be, you know, driving him around and writing scope sheets. And those of you that know Kobe know that he is very much a get it done person. And so if you're delaying his process by stupidity, that does not make him very happy. So he got fairly short with me and very diplomatically looked at me and said, sweetheart, take your sunglasses off and look at the dents. And I'm like, okay. And so I
don't know if I was in that nice of a tone. I know I came down off that RV and I was really upset to even be there or have that claim in the first place, but I couldn't believe she wasn't done with it. We had to go. Like, and I should mention that morning, somehow she screwed up and typed in the wrong address, and we drove like, I don't know, 6 miles past the location before we realized we needed to turn around. I figured it out that it wasn't right, and it put us behind about 30 minutes. And when you've got a jam-packed hail day, 30 minutes is a death sentence. So, you know, trying to turn things around and get to the last lane before we lost daylight.
Anyway, we survived that.
Barely.
We made it through. But
we made it back. That was a really good experience. I think that got you to kind of see what it was like for me out in the field.
Yeah, it definitely opened my eyes to what you do day in and day out and kind of know like what to expect when you're there. And I don't know, there's something to be said about, I'm a very hands-on learner. And so being exposed to the environment was super important to me. I took a lot from that trip. I think the biggest thing was how hard Kobe works and how much he wanted to get this done. And you know, how much I wanted to learn so then I could take some of this off of his plate. I did not want to be in that situation again.
Yeah, that was a situation we tried to avoid if at all possible. We had a lot of fun stories along the way that we'll probably tell over other episodes or podcasts. But yeah, when you first started, though, you know, I remember that we moved to Minnesota, took the franchise for SCA. We were worried we weren't going to get enough work, how wrong we were, looking back now. But we got to a point where we got approached by a firm to do desk writing. So I took the opportunity to try to make more money or at least have some ancillary income. And I figured Ashley would be great at sitting there. I could teach her how to write. So do you remember that? Could you walk us through how you kind of got, you know, going with that and how?
Yeah. So it was obviously all hail. And I remember
all hail.
I remember sitting at the kitchen table, just moved into the house. Things were very, very crazy around here. And Kobe sitting right next to me, and we just worked one estimate at a time. We were both desk writing at the time. He was just getting me really comfortable with things. It was great. I had him right there if I had questions. You know, working off of scope sheets of people you're not used to is definitely a different situation. The learning the way that firm does their processes and things. I had some very nice people to help me along the way. So started doing that. I remember I was doing maybe like 3 or 4 a day. And if I could get to 5, I was like so, so excited.
I remember you being stressed out.
I was very stressed out.
I may have done it a little bit on purpose just so she knew really how I felt, because I would get really upset. Like, you know, like we talked about with the story or efficiencies. So I'd be like, yeah, you should be able to knock out 10 to 15 a day. No doubt. Easy. You know, and she rolls her eyes. And again, you know, expectation versus reality. And I was very encouraging, but I distinctly remember you getting really frustrated or really upset.
I got really stressed out. You know, there was so much stuff. I just felt like I didn't know. And it just seemed like every file I'd come upon had more stuff I didn't know. And so it felt like a broken record going to Kobe. Hey, Kobe, hey, Kobe, hey, Kobe. And Kobe's very much the type of person, he'll tell you once, he'll tell you a second time. But if he has to tell you a third time on the same exact thing, he starts to get very, very frustrated. And I was losing self-confidence. I had no confidence going into it. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. But he's on the back end just telling me, you got it. You're doing the right thing. You know what you're doing. If you're doing something wrong, I'm going to tell you. I think the biggest thing that always stuck with me when I knew Kobe knew I could do it was he always said to me, I wouldn't ask you to do it if I knew you couldn't do it. I'm not going to let you fail. And I'm like, okay. And I would just remind myself of that. So it became writing more and more desk writes. I think I did that first season.
I distinctly remember times where you were in tears.
Oh yeah. Oh, there
were many telling times. You've got to take one thing at a time. And I think I realized it was so, because, you know, for most of you that do know me, the ones that don't, you know, I'm a mentor now at IA Path, but back then I was just really starting out my mentoring. I answered a lot of questions in the community. I think I had just built CCC One training at the time, but I never really taught somebody, like especially one-on-one, but I basically took the IA Path model and just, you know, converted it into our own one-on-one session of, you know, hey,
you know, this is what you've got to do. So we went through a bunch of different trainings, the licenses, things like that, that she needed along the way when I was working. And then when she got into the desk writing or doing the writing side, I had no idea how amazing that was going to be for us down the road. But I took it just step at a time. You take it, you know, follow this path. You know, I tried to lay out the steps for her. This is what you do. This is, you know, each step you've got to do to complete an estimate. And then I was like her own community. Because she never really has participated in Mighty Network. She would, you know, get on there when we first started out and like look at, you know, posts or see things. And then the notifications got too crazy and I was answering way too much stuff. So she was getting bombarded. Didn't like that. But with me, I just acted as her own community. She'd come to me and ask me questions. And that was something that I had to really have patience with. And like she said, I told her, I said, look, if I give you an answer to your question, either remember it or write it down. And I'm fine with repeating it so you can write it down. Do not continue to come to me with the same things over and over again. And I think that's something really big in this industry that, you know, cannot be overstated, is that you need to write, you know, just like in class, just like with anything, take notes or find your process for learning. I've always been a very visual learner, or a guy that picks things up quickly. Ashley's not. Ashley's somebody that just has to write things down. If she writes it down and then she reads over it and then maybe she writes it again in a different way and puts on a new piece of paper, that's her learning process. But you've got to find yours and you've got to learn quickly.
Well, I think there for a while too, I was using Kobe way too much as a crutch. And I think it's easy to do in this industry when you're trying to get this file closed. And you're like, man, I know he's told me this before. Man, I know I've got this answer somewhere. But instead of actually sitting there and thinking about what it was we discussed, I would just pick the phone up and call him and just expect him to give me the answer.
I remember that. I'd be in the car and I'd be like, sweetheart, think about that for a minute. Okay, let's. And then I'd go over it. Like I would like basically repeat what she said back to me as a question. And she'd be like, oh, I should do this. But she had the same complex I did, the insecurity of being wrong. And then I had to explain, as I will explain to you right now, you're going to make mistakes. It's not that there are like very few mistakes that you do not want to make. Okay. Very high level. Like you don't want to just unilaterally approve $5,000 in custom equipment coverage and send it over to the shop to go ahead and repair. Like there's certain things like that you do not want to do, right? I think it's common sense. But if you put the wrong amount of cover car, or you put the wrong amount of XYZ on an estimate, or you believe this should be replaced and it could have been repaired, or vice versa, not a big deal, especially in auto. Look, you've got quality control. And again, in other podcasts, we'll go through the kind of the steps of the claims process. But you've got quality control. You've got so many people that should be putting their eyes on it that if you made a mistake, you get a rejection. And I remember Ashley, which I think it might be a difference between men and women, because men get rejected all the time in life, just personally. That's just what we're used to, right? Women don't deal with rejection as much. So she took it really personally. I did when I first started, but I realized that was just part of the industry after a while. And I kept telling her, it's okay. It's fine. We'll work through it. Just don't keep making the same dumb mistakes or bonehead, you know, moves. You know, if you do it once, that's okay. But the next time you should remember that and not do that and start tracking or writing notes or whatever. So
I think I was fearful that like I had that fear that I was going to lose my job. Like I had that fear that like, oh my gosh, I'm actually got this kind of like gig for myself where I'm writing these desk writes. And, you know, I'm actually starting to pull my weight a little bit other than just like doing paperwork for Kobe. And, oh, I'm packing his lunch. And, oh, you know, I'm here to help him when he comes home with whatever he may need. I felt like I had kind of my own thing and I was, you know, starting to succeed and pull in money and, you know, contribute my part. And then I would make a mistake and I would get, you know, somebody would call me and talk to me about it or whatever it may be. And I'm like, oh my goodness, they're not going to want me anymore. I'm making these mistakes. Like, I'm going to lose my job. And the worst of the worst would go through my head. And I look back at it now and I kind of giggle and I'm like,
because now, I mean, you're one of their top people doing desk right. For me, I couldn't even do what I do in business without you. Not to the level we do it. And again, we'll talk about that in future episodes or podcasts, but I mean, you know, to see that growth, and I think that, you know, and again, I think, you know, you were incredibly smart, picked it up, but I think it just goes to show because, you know, did you know anything about cars before this?
No, I didn't know what a fender was. I didn't know. I mean, I obviously know what a door was, but belt molding, you know.
Some people right now may be listening to this thing and what's a belt molding, but
yeah, I mean, there were so many things. I mean, I knew a headlamp, obviously, but let's be real. Most of it, I was like, I don't know what that is.
I probably could have conned her into she needed to pick up blinker fluid from AutoZone.
Oh,
or
no,
something.
Come on. Yeah. I would not have followed.
Headlamp fluid or something. Yeah.
Come on now.
Flux capacitor, you know. But yeah, you didn't know anything about this industry at all. You knew nothing about insurance. I knew some because of my younger days and helping one of my friends restore cars, old cars. So I knew some. And also, I think being a guy, you somehow happen to be around your dad when he tries to fix something or put oil in the car or something. So you may get a little bit more knowledge through osmosis, but I didn't know that much more than you, but you knew nothing and went into this industry. So I think it goes to show that, you know, you don't have to be somebody that's got experience rebuilding cars or working in a body shop to be in this industry.
You have to be patient, though, and you have to be patient and you have to be willing to kind of admit that you know nothing. And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people is they're afraid to say, I don't know what that is. I don't know what, you know, what it may mean. And even
when you say patience, you mean with yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, patience with anything in life is great. You know, patience is virtue. One I've really struggled to have, but yeah, patience with yourself, I think is a big point.
Yeah. There were lots of times I couldn't understand why I didn't get it by now or why I couldn't, you know, move faster or whatever it may be. But
what helped you to kind of figure those things out? Like when, you know, like you went from writing two or three files, you know, a day, just, and for everybody out there that's currently working or thinking about getting into this industry, how did you go from like two to three? What went on in your mind? How did you find that rhythm?
Well, I write a lot of stuff down. When I started writing for this firm, they didn't really have like guidelines for each carrier. It was just kind of like, oh, don't do that for them. Oh, don't do that for them. And then when Kobe had the franchise, I thought it was just so awesome that with every file came carrier guidelines. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. This is like my go-to on what to do or what not to do. I had all these notes in a notebook. I have a little diary I carry everywhere. That would be like Liberty Mutual, USAA, Nationwide, Selective, what's allowed, what's not allowed, because I didn't have any of that. And I would just, you know, go back to that. And it wasn't until like, I don't know, a year and a half ago or something of that sort that all that's in there now. And there's like cheat sheets and all this stuff. So I wrote a lot of stuff down.
But how did you get faster? Like, was there some magic pill you took or what made you faster?
Practice a lot of
just doing it.
Yeah. Doing it.
It's kind of like Nike. Just do it.
Yeah. You know, pretty much. I got really competitive with myself. Like I would get really excited to when Kobe came home to be like, I did 15 files today. Because he would get so excited for me. So a lot of it was just like repetition. You know, I got to the point where I memorized the guidelines. So I wasn't having to go back and look at all that stuff. Hail is pretty simplistic when it comes to writing. I knew what had markups and what didn't have markups. At first, I had to look all that up. I didn't know. I'm like, oh, roof rail, does that need a markup? It didn't come natural to me. I didn't understand double-walled panel and how I knew if it was. I struggled with all of that. One of the biggest eye-opening experiences for me is being in the field, seeing Kobe do it. And when we worked our first drive-in, I took so much away from that.
But she means catastrophic hail drive-in.
Yeah. That was very eye-opening. I learned a lot. I heard a lot of lingo I'd never heard. And just a lot of different people to kind of pick their brains and see what they do and what they use. Kobe's been very supportive of when I'm like, I need this, I need that. Oh, this helps. He supported me on all my needs and wants with stuff.
What would you tell people looking back, things you know now that you didn't know then? Because look, you've been in it now, what, going into your third year. I've been doing this, you know, 4 years, so I'm a year going through 4 years. What would you tell people starting out? You know, obviously you mentioned patience, but, you know, is there something you'd want to tell people, you know, getting into this industry and auto just in general, things that you need to think about? And I'll let you think about that while I kind of tell some, you know, say something about that. I know for me, when I started looking back now, I would have told, there's times I hit walls. I've talked about that in previous podcasts on here. I've had times where I was really frustrated, burnt out, wanting to quit. And I'll just tell you that it's just, you're just not going to have overnight success. I don't think in anything you do, I don't think anything's overnight success. You know, you hear the stories of people having to put in hours and hours and hours of work. And you're starting something completely new. This is completely new to you, whether you've been in around the industry. This is a new business that you're starting. There's a lot of things you don't know. And you've just got to, you know, again, I think practice, like you said, practice makes perfect. But you've got to, patience is a really good gold nugget to take away from this episode, is that you're not going to be able to just write 15 estimates in a day. You're not going to be able to scope 15 estimates or 15 vehicles in a day. You've just got to take it step by step and try to set expectations and get a good support system. But for you, what would you, is there anything you want people to know or wish you could go back and tell yourself if you could?
I think very much for me is I thought there should have been instant gratification. Like I was like, oh, well, we've got all these files. We should be able to complete all these files really fast. So piggybacking off of what you said, it's a slow process. We were very fortunate to be exposed to some great opportunities and willing enough to take those opportunities. And I think that's another big thing is don't be afraid to take something. Don't be afraid after you've gotten your feet wet and you feel a little comfortable to maybe bite off a little bit more. I remember when desk writes were slowing down for me a little bit. I told Kobe I was kind of bored. And he said, really? Okay. And next thing I know, I was getting a phone call about handling supplements. So that's a whole different topic, but that was a good experience. I was glad that came down. I was not glad at first. I was very frustrated with Kobe that he thought I could handle something like that.
I definitely volunteered her. She told me she was bored, so I found something for her to do.
So yeah, I think it's, you know, again, patience and just knowing it's not a fast process, but take those opportunities. I think that's one thing that we were not afraid of. Was to take any opportunity that we could. Kobe went seeking opportunities like crazy. He does not like to be bored. He likes to stay very busy.
I was very paranoid when I started out. Like I was scared we were going to run out of money or we weren't going to have enough work. You know, I think there's a lot of fear when you start your own business, and make no mistake, this is starting your own business, especially in the auto realm. Property, you may, you know, get away with doing W-2 and not having a business, but with auto, you got to have a business. That's the only way you can run this and not get hit by Uncle Sam or whatever. So I was very active in finding opportunity, and that's probably some of my background in sales, to go out and close deals or get things done where we had plenty of different revenue streams from, you know, the light auto to the heavy equipment, specialty, recreational vehicles, hail, catastrophic hail deployments or opportunities, the desk writing. If there was money to be made, and even to this day, I want to try to make it. I wish I could do it all. I can't. I found out that obviously you can't do every opportunity. It'll drive you nuts. You don't have the kind of time. You don't have enough time in the day to do it all. And I'm not really big on managing massive teams to try to do all that, because then your quality falls off. But again, people do it. There's a massive amount of opportunity in this industry. I think that's one thing that's really shocked me was the amount of opportunity. Like I didn't, like when I got into it, even when I was doing light auto or doing, I had no idea about desk writing, had no idea that that was even an option, that you could make money sitting at home in your Jimmy Jams, you know, and doing that. That was crazy. Like the specialty heavy equipment stuff I had heard of, but when I started, but like, you know, I was like, oh, that must take years to master. And I was doing, my first month, I was doing recreational vehicles and RVs, and I had no idea what I was doing. So that led more to my insecurities. But it was kind of it's amazing when you start really looking at all the different opportunities in this industry, which was a surprise to me. The next thing, and I think we'll kind of wrap it up with this, but what was, you know, what's the biggest positive to you to the industry now that we've been doing this for so long? What do you think are the biggest positives or positive takeaways getting into this industry, like you had, just for you personally and for us as in general?
I think now is a little bit of flexibility and freedom. I say that lightly because it is not what some people would think, like, oh, I can work when I want to work. No, you have cycle time. There's expectations. There's things that have to be done. You're not completely like free will, and you know, you can do what you want and come and go as you want and turn on and off. Like we don't take advantage of the system by any means, which is, I think, why we stay very busy as well. But there is freedoms, especially in what I do. I can really kind of decide what time I want to start my day. I can kind of decide, you know, how hard do I want to work? How driven am I right now? I have learned living in Minnesota that the fall and summer is beautiful here. We like to fish. We like to be at the cabin on the weekends. We like to spend time with family. And in the winter, we are locked down. I mean, you aren't doing much here in the winter. There's just not much to do. So these weekends when the weather is crummy, I'm like, feed me. I'll work all weekend. Send me the desk rides. And then in the summer, I'm like, I'm not working this weekend, which they don't expect me to work the weekend or ride on the weekend. But if I know we're going to be home and nothing's going on, I'm like, send me those files. So I think that's like a huge thing for me is having some of that flexibility and freedom to an extent, but also not taking advantage of it, because I can see very fast where someone would be like, nah, you're not very reliable. No, thanks.
I think the positive for me, you know, getting into it was I think we both agreed the freedom, being able to take time off, which we have done a lot of recently, thanks to the very fortunate situations with the connections we've made in the industry. And I think speaks to the quality of our business. But that was also something that I will say on the freedom aspect of it, you shouldn't expect it right away. It takes a while to build a business that can operate as a finely tuned machine, where you have enough trust, where you build up the relationships, where you have built your business enough to be able to take enough time off. And I'm not saying you shouldn't take time off when you start in your first year. I'm just saying that, you know, as the old saying goes, make hay while the sun shines. I'm a big proponent of that. Now, remember, if the sun's always shining on you after a year or so, maybe you should take a break, because obviously you can burn yourself out pretty quickly. The big positive for me, or the thing I like most about the industry as a whole, is that it's a huge industry with a lot of opportunity, a lot of different ways you can go or retool your business to still make money and adapt with it. But I think that with it being so big, it's also really small. There is very few people like it's kind of like, you know, it's a massive industry, but it feels like a tight-knit family. Like there's not that many people in the industry that don't know each other. It feels very small because we you know, I'll be talking to a VP of a firm or talking to a QC guy or whatever, and they know somebody that I met the other day at a body shop that 20 years ago used to run claims or whatever. It's crazy how tight the industry is. And I think that's a really big positive because, at least for me, I've always been, you know, all about a good name in business and in presenting quality products. So I think that really is beneficial for people that stand out because that gets circulated pretty quickly. I think some people try to hold on to it, maybe, you know, like, oh, I got a good appraiser or whatever. And they don't try to let that secret out. But if you're really good, it just spreads like wildfire. And I thought that was really a positive thing in the industry. Now, flipping the script, negative. And what do you think the biggest negative in the industry is for you, you know, as far as what you've seen?
The lack of training. I mean, the lack of just, there's so much stuff out there. And when you get on with these firms, it's just kind of like they expect you to know everything. And it's like, I think that is a thing for me. And then also just how hard it is to get going. I think it's very easy to give up, to be like, eh, this probably isn't quite for me, because it is such a slow start. It is a grueling slow start.
Yeah, you have it's definitely a grind. An everyday grind that you've got to kind of get those wheels almost like rusted wheels that you've got to get turning and oil and grease to get them rolling in an efficient machine. And to your other point that you were, you know, discussing is the fact that, yeah, firms expect you. It's kind of like the joke that, yeah, you need 10, you know, you need 30 years of experience and you're 15 years old. Yeah. So, you know, it's, but I mean, at the end of the day, the firm's hiring your business, right? They're not there to train you. You're a 1099 contractor. Their business is hiring your business to do a job, so they expect you to be able to come in and do that job. They don't have time most of the time to train you. Will they help you? Sure. There's a lot of firms out there that are really willing to help you, but they can't. They don't have the resources or the staff or the time to train you. So,
but I guess some of that goes to more like using their systems. Like, you know, I would get so caught up on all these different firms having all these different systems. And I'm like, well, how do you work this thing? Like, what do you want? Where do I put this stuff? Like, how do you want me to use this system that you now want me to upload everything into? That's where I would get really caught up is like,
that's a huge downfall. I agree with that. I will say that I don't think there's a firm out there, at least in auto. And I think property may do a better job of this, but in auto especially, and you know, I love the firms and they've got a lot of great technology, a lot of awesome apps and technology. But for the amount of stuff you have to do in their technology, they are really bad about training you on how to upload files or do what all, you know, going through the processes. And they have no training videos. They have no, they have somebody call you for maybe 15 to 30 minutes. It sounds like they've drank, you know, 8 pots of coffee and they're just flying through the phone call. And yeah, you can try to call, but even if you try to call tech support or help, it's, well, and it's
that,
bad.
And even at that point, when you're getting that first call, you've probably not dabbled enough in that program or in that portal to know what you may have questions about. Like you're
some
just
people just aren't tech savvy anyway. I mean, they're not bad, but you know, some of this stuff is not straightforward. It's not like it's just laid out like, you know, like things that they've used before. Again, so we, you know, even at IAPath, we train in a certain system for you to learn, but every system's different. And yeah, so I would agree with that. I think a huge negative for me, and it's funny because I've always been business-minded, but there's just some crappy clients. And I don't mean firms necessarily. I mean, look, I've gotten along with every firm. There's some firms that my business doesn't gel with their business. But carriers, And this is where I think it really bothers me in the fact that we're hired as the expert, you know, the expert to quote unquote to do a job. But yet then, you know, there's a majority of carriers are great. They trust us to make decisions. We're the ones on site. We're the ones making the inspection, making the decisions. And they kind of let us do what we want to do with some very wide bumpers, just like a bowling alley, like really wide. They're going to make sure you don't go in the gutter with, you know, writing your estimate or how you're handling the claim. But, you know, I ran into a lot of cut rate, you know, insurances. They talk about them, you know, on TV that, you know, honestly, the best carriers to work for are those mid-level, in my opinion, mid-level to smaller carriers. But I hate it because, again, they dictate your job to the point that it's not fun or it becomes almost not fair. And I will say that this is a big misconception because I will tell you most all carriers want to pay. They do want to pay. They do want to take care of their insureds. But I will say that there's a handful out there that are making it worse for or making the industry as a whole look bad. And it's just part of the industry. You kind of have to deal with it. And the saddest part is a lot of those carriers are some of the highest volume providers to some of these firms. And that's just really sad because then you have to make a choice. Do you want to eat? Or do you want to stand your ground and say this isn't right? And it's just really hard because I thought that independent appraisers and adjusters, for that matter, would be treated better. And I'm not saying that they treat us bad, but I will tell you that you do feel like a redheaded stepchild, you know, if you get that term. You feel like kind of an outcast, an outsider in the industry. You're not treated as an equal, even from people that do not have near the experience that you do. Some, you know, kid fresh out of college that's now an inside adjuster at XYZ insurance company thinks that they know more than you do because they just they're freshly minted into the industry. So I just, you know, and like I said, for the majority, they're great people, and you may get that with any industry. I guess I just expected a higher level of respect and a better level of service for the industry being a multi-billion dollar industry. So I think that's kind of the negative that you have to learn how to deal with. And you start, once you take enough crap and you get to a certain level, then you can say no. You can, you know, kind of work with the people that are working with the majority instead of that minority. And I think that, you know, again, that was hard, and also harder that obviously the firms want that business, but they're kind of in between a rock and a hard place. So that was hard. With that said, though, any last thoughts or anything, parting thoughts on the topic of us getting started?
I guess if you're getting started, don't give up. That's all I can say.
I think you should push through. I think that if you're struggling, I think you really need to seek out other people in the industry to help you. And I don't just mean anybody. Don't get on social media and post because they'll blast you. Get away from the negativity of the world. We've got enough in it. Reach out to me, reach out to Ashley, reach out to Chris Stanley, Brad Fancher, reach out to iPath. Even if you're in property, we are always looking to talk and help you in your journey. I've told people that iPath's not right for them. It's just not. They're going property full gung-ho. They do not want to do auto. They're pretty close to getting there. They're on the cusp. You know, we try to help you just get work. We want to see people successful because there's more people going out of this industry, retiring or quitting or burnout or whatever it is, than are entering the industry. And it's causing a massive shortage. And while you may think that's great for us, yeah, short term it is because I have more work than I can ever possibly handle. The future is that if we can't meet the demands of these carriers, they will find a different option, which means virtual or going back to staff or going to technology or whatever. Again, if we can't fill that need, they will find something to fill the need. And when I say fill the need, that doesn't mean part of the way or fill in the gaps. they will be looking at that as the primary option. So we want to make sure you guys get work, guys and girls. We'd love to see anybody. If we can help you in any way, please reach out and let us know. This is the first of a long series of different podcasts we're going to do on the Independent Adjuster Podcast. We'll have interviews. We'll have topics that you, the viewers, have asked about over and over again. Ashley and myself will be diving into those topics. We'll be diving in it with industry experts. So this is one of just many to come. This kind of just gives kind of a start off, jump off point. And we're going to try to be doing these either every week to bi-weekly, depending on how many we can get recorded. Look forward to hearing from you guys. Please like, comment, and share these throughout LinkedIn, through social media, anywhere you can post it. It would be so appreciated if this has helped you in some way, shape, or form. If this podcast has, share it on YouTube. Go like, follow, and share the Independent Adjuster Podcast on YouTube. That's how we get appreciation from it. We want to reach more people. We want to help more people get work. Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Toby Hearn
and Ashley Kitterman.
Keep walking your path and claiming your life.
Are you dreaming of a career in auto damage, but find yourself not meeting the experience requirements? You can try the first part of our 7-part auto damage certification for free. This allows you to dive deep into auto damage training with no strings attached. And if you love it, you can continue on and purchase the full program. With this certification, you gain not just in-depth knowledge and skills, but also an all-access pass to our exclusive community. A full year of mentorship, and yes, get the 2 to 5 year experience requirement waived with over 40 firms. Your future in auto damage begins today. Visit iPath.com to start your free trial and discover where iPath can take you. iPath, claim your life.